Hello everyone. We are the top non-model group. We are working on
cricket,
shrimp and beetle. In last 2 weeks we did many experiments in which not all experiments were successful, and we kind of killed many cells actually. And since it is a course of interface between physics and biology, we have two kinds of death here. This is a biology version of death, and here is the physics version of death. What you all see here is DNA fragmentation in the nucleus of Fayale embryos, and here the tissue relaxation in Caesarean embryo. But we had some experiments which were successful. And this is Fayale cell cycle, which you heard in Tasso's talks. Fayale has this stereotyped cell division, in which, this after three cleavage at 8 cell stage, these they have this 4 cells called meiomias, which are these 4 big cells, and 4 cells called micromias, these small ones, whose fate specification is known, which means these blue guys, which forms future ectodermal cells. Okay, so these, this is a 3-day-old embryo, and at the posterior part of the embryo, the cells have this highly patterned arrangement. Okay, and what you're looking at here is the ventral view of the embryo, and this is highly it's bilateral symmetric, which means this is a mirror image of this one. And this is known, and it is highly conserved from one embryo to another. But what is unknown is that how at this stage, like cell fate is. Cell lineage is conserved at these stages, like in 1 day or 2 day cell cycle. So this was our question. This is what we wanted to know. Okay. So our plan was to do light sheet imaging to collect 1 day embryos and to do light sheet imaging until the 3 day old. Okay, but unfortunately we couldn't do this imaging for technical reasons, this was a failure. And, but confocal imaging came to our rescue, but unfortunately we couldn't do for 3 day long imaging. We could only do for 24-hour duration because of the photo glitching. And
what was the, I don't know if it's a joke, what are the limitations? Why didn't you use the spin?
So the rotation, it was broken. Either we could manually rotate it.
The
seating
used to be one of
you. Can we say it was broken? That's in the passage. It wasn't that you broke it.
This was the idea that we would break it. But
it was already broken.
Somebody got there first.
So, yeah. Kristen will tell more about
what we do further. He's Professor Misha.
Okay, so basically actually we image actually three embryos completely independently. So actually this one, as you can see here, actually you have this ventral medulline actually here. Yes, here. And then we are able actually to compare actually the left side of the embryo and also the right side. For this embryo, unfortunately, so it began really nicely and then suddenly completely rotated. So we just can extract the left, only the left side information. And similarly, here in this embryo, we only extract actually the right side on this embryos.
Are all of these cleavages superficial?
What?
So are all of these cleavages under the plasma membrane, or there are some cleavages in three dimensions?
There is actually a cleavage in three dimensions. Here we put a maximal projection.
So they don't migrate like in flies to the surface?
No, no, it is superficial.
So all the cleavages are
on top of the yolk. Yes, that's okay. Why it's easy to imagine.
And so how, when do they become superficial? Is there a stage when they divide in the bulk? Or?
Yes, I mean, we can discuss it later. We can go to the, I mean, we are meeting later.
Okay. So how do we analyze it? Actually, we use actually the one, the PG plugin, which is called Mammoth, which is developed by Tassos and Carsten, which allow actually to make the cell lineage and the tracking. So basically, this is what we're doing for mostly for 2 to 4 to 5 days. And yeah, so basically we'll just keep looking to all of our result, for example, for this embryo, so we are able actually to spot every cell, as you can see here. So here, actually, for each spot, actually, corresponds to one cell, actually, here. And here, actually, the cells are colored by this, according, actually, the color code, according to the final position. Yes. And here, actually, if I play again, yes. You can follow us, also the you can also display actually this tracking here. Yeah. So in able actually to just facilitate our data analysis, so we did actually the 2D map actually, which is a virtual construction of this cell, and each row actually corresponds actually to one color here. And is also reflecting one parasegment in the parallel embryos. Yeah. So we are able actually to make this lineage tree. So for example, here for one cell actually, according to this time. So this is according to the time and also ventral to posterior actually. And here, as you can see here, for example, when once the cell actually divide into two branches, we are able actually to make this kind of relationships and this is lineage. Yeah.
Right. And so we actually have a result, which is good. And so here what we did is we took these grids made from the lineage trees and compared sister cells across embryos to determine if the lineage relationships were variable or invariable between these different embryos. So on the left, have the first embryo, second embryo, third, and then each of these lines just represents that these are sister cells. And from this, we determined that different lineage trees give rise to the same final grid pattern. So here we just overlaid the lineage trees of embryo 1 versus 2, 2 versus 3, or 1 versus 3. We actually saw that these very rarely showed shared lineage paths. We actually only saw two groups, so this one and this one share the same lineage. Otherwise, they're completely different.
Could you go back on before you merge? Can I ask the on embryo one?
Yeah.
You look like you've got three. There are three cells connected.
Yeah. So we could catch often 2 to 3 cell divisions before they arrive in the grid, which is how you can get this sort of pattern where multiple lineages come from one kind of mother. And then we actually compared, even within the same embryo, the different lineages on the bilaterally symmetric left and right sides of the grid. So here is left side of grid for one embryo, the same embryo is right side, and we get fairly different lineage patterns here. So kind of our conclusion is that even though we have this very stereotyped 4-cell stage early, or 8-cell stage even, we have a very stereotyped grid pattern by day 3. It seems that we have kind of variable cell behaviors that can happen to lead to this very stereotyped grid.
How do you tell from which cell is, how do you tell this cell and this embryo corresponds exactly to this cell?
So in the grid, it's actually very easy to overlap them. So what we did is you actually start when you're tracking with the grid and move backwards, then see how they divide. So you can overlap all of the embryos with this grid pretty easily.
How could you image the left and the right side without the spin, just with the control?
So you just have to lay the embryo so it's the lateral side's facing down, and you can actually catch them both at the same time. So this all kind of happens on one side of the embryo. So here we say every shrimp, or even half of a shrimp, has a go.
Well, that's a discovery, right?
Yes, we have the second half of the group now.
Oh, right, okay. Because that's going to be remarkably good.
I'm sure Tassos introduced the system in the first week, which is to recapture or repeat the gastrulation, the early gastrulation. We're basically interested in this process. So this is a reconstructed sperm image I took a while back in Dresden in my regular life. And so the embryo basically forms completely different from the sofa. What it mainly does is this blastoderm basically flows over posterior and then falls ventrally to form a germ band. And this germ band will then basically grow and make the embryo. Okay, and I would like to draw attention in particular when the movie repeats to this initial part here, where in this haze is what's called a growth zone, second Batesian zone, because unlike Drosophila, this insect basically adds the abdominal segments sequentially, so you can basically appreciate this here when it then grows and adds. This will make the head, and this will basically make the tail. So we also would like to image this in the sperm. But you see one problem with sperm data already in this movie. There's a lot of yolk in between, and so you do not get single cell resolution, even if you had a written sperm. And so we turn to a technique that Andres pioneered a while back, where you basically just you just take the eggs and then very carefully cut open their shell and switch the yolk out and try to get to this forming germ bank without injuring them. Okay? And so if you manage to do this, you can basically put in the petri dish, put some insect medium around it, and then image it in a photo.
So there is no yolk in this.
Well, not as long you cut it open.
How long can it live without?
Oh, I see. So the insect medium provides both the yolk.
Yes.
So after all this is a dissected embryo we obtained and observed with Confocor. And we, on this picture, we remove also the amnion to see the mesoderm. And we can observe, like, this is over, say, several hours, like one night, I think. And we obtained this set of cells. Instead, we were a bit too lazy to click on them, so we trust our computer. Which gave us these trajectories of each cells, and it's not a good computer. So at the end we are all the okay. So well, let's see. So in the embryo we observe like we have a clear during the growth, like the during the elongation, there's this anterior posterior length that grows, and the thickness of the embryo reduces, and if you plot the ratio with against the time, you see that there is a pretty clear increase of this ratio. The length increase while the thickness of the embryo reduces with time. And to come back to the tracking points, so this is what we obtain at the end. We can plot some velocity fields, but we found out that this is not the proper way to observe how the cells are going through the embryo, because like if you take the embryo that is moving, most of the velocity field you will see is just like the motion of the embryo. So if, for instance, the embryo is going towards this direction, you'll see vector fields that go into this direction, but that doesn't mean the cells go towards this direction in the embryo frame of reference. So just to illustrate this, this is two pictures of the same vector fields but with different center of observations. And you see like here, you look like there is some expanding from this point, whereas here like everything is going back to the anterior part. So we decided to take a new approach, but unfortunately we applied this approach only to dead embryo, which is really unlucky. That's still just to show you the kind of proof of concept for future analysis. So this is the movie we have. We also made some analysis on it. So we also have the same vector field as before. And we wanted just to see how. So just coming back. Here you see that at first I colored in different colors each cells, so that you can see how some parts are going away from others. And so this is something we would like to apply to future analysis.
So is there no growth in this case? Or
just I mean, I cannot conclude anything on this because this is just dying. I mean, it's relaxing. And we would like to.
I should add that the drug that we added is supposed to stop cell proliferation, so yeah. You shouldn't see cell division in the first place.
But sometimes you lose tracking because like just the software wasn't able to follow the point, or sometimes it's just like either sometimes cell divisions the software lose tracking of the cells, or apoptosis the software also loses. So this is the point that vanished from at some point. You could remove them from the plot because like you don't really have like the data for all the time course. So just to conclude on this little part, so it's important to be aware that we have to have a global deformation map of the system rather than a global that takes into account the global displacement of the embryo, which is really misleading. And so this may be a bit too soon to say, but we didn't really yet see a prominent movement of the cell towards the anterior part. This is what we wanted to see, but anyway, we see this elongation and shrinking of the embryo in the time.
But I didn't quite understand what was wrong with the other movie that you showed.
No, but I mean, that was just a mistake. I didn't have the time to make the analysis of the actual movie. The first movie, so there are two movies of tracking. The first one, which was done on the living embryo, which is kind of happy. and the second one that was done on
But for the first movie, so you correctly noticed that if the whole thing translates, you don't want to look at translational velocity. But given the movie already got, you can just subtract it.
Yeah.
It's what we did.
In the second
but you can subtract it, but I mean, if you want, like for instance, if you have like different road zones, like I mean, what you want
so is the issue that it was just drifting out of a field of view?
There is also like, if you, for instance, if you clean your embryo at the end, you will see like the embryo elongating towards this direction because it cannot go towards this direction. So if you look at the vector field, the global vector field, you will go like towards this direction, and you cannot see if I mean, in case there is some bands of growing, like at some in some region, cells are going in different directions. This cannot be seen if you clean it. Or you can see it maybe, but not that clearly. That if you have like a local deformation map of the embryo.
But what you are, you need. In every case, you need a reference point to go to. And if you need a movement, a vector of this distance, you need a reference. So yeah, I think.
If you want to draw the velocity field, definitely.
Yeah, so what would be, if you don't pin it here, what would be
you can the reference? At any point, you can see whether, like, have a, instead of having a velocity field, you could have like a divergence map, whether that. Cells are getting closer together, or whether they are getting away from
each other. You can calculate by smoothing your measurement and taking.
Sure. I agree. It's just like I just want to emphasize that the velocity field not maybe the thing to look at.
Maybe should.
Okay, cool. So now I'm going to move on to our organism, the gorillas. This is a spin movie that we've taken of the embryo, anterior, this end, posterior, this end. The entire embryo is about 3 mm, so it's huge. We are seeing like about half of it. And so what we're seeing right here, is that the blast burden cell on the surface is condensing to form this germ band. And then this germ band is going to curve backwards. And then after that, there's going to be segmentation happening. So we are also interested in the same zone as in the tribolium case, at the back here, towards here, there's the growth zone. And because it's difficult to extract information of cell movement or proliferation from the spin data, we decided to take the same approach as previously to just dissect out this embryo and then look at it in the confocal. This is the confocal data that we got from a dissected germ band. Again, this is posterior, this is anterior, and this is about the half point of the germ band. And what you can see, or at least what the first thing that strikes me, is this burst of cell proliferation events that kind of travel from the posterior end towards the anterior end. And I was very interested in what we can say about the what we can say about this cell division in that. So in order to quantify this observation that we see, the first thing that we did was to count the number of cell division throughout the entire field of view, and then plot a histogram as a function of the AD axis. So what we can see here is that towards the posterior end, there's significantly more cell divisions, but otherwise we see a more or less a homogeneous.
This is over all times.
Yes, this is over all time. So I'm taking, I'm summing over all time. And so that's one thing that we can characterize. The other thing is that we can look at the orientation of the mitotic division. So in this movie right here, basically I'm binning the cell division events in time of 15 minutes, and then I'm plotting them just in the XY plane. And so you can see that there is this burst of events and it kind of travels in front, and then it almost appears that there's a second burst coming up, and we don't have data for subsequent time points. But since this is a cell division event, we can quantify the orientation of the cell division with respect to the AP axis, which is somewhere around here. So if I plot this, so this is how I define my angle. Z
0 degrees is parallel to the AP axis, 90 degrees is orthogonal to the AP axis. And again, if I take all the subdivision events and plot it on the Rose plot, what we can see is that there is a bias towards the cell division events that occurs along the AP axis, which would, I mean, intuitively that might mean that the cell division is pushing the germ bank elongation along the AP axis. And then the third thing that we can look at is the cell division timing. So again, I'm counting all the cell division events along the entire field of view, and then I just count them and bin them as a function of time. So here you can see that initially there's a burst of cell division event, it goes down and then it kind of go up, but then it's,
so the bias was something 30 degrees, 45 degrees, and so it's not along the AP axis, right? So I will.
Okay, sorry. This is not the spindle position. So I track one cell, and then it divides to two daughter cells. I draw a line connecting the two daughter cells.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So this is a line. So if the two daughter cells split this way, I register 0 degrees. If the two daughter cells divide this way, I register 90 degrees. So because we have more along with angle less than 45, more events is happening this way. Right? Exactly.
I think Boris's point is that very few events are actually happening parallel to the axis. There's a bias towards
regions
that are closer to the axis than often.
Yeah. Yes.
Are you putting the absolute magnitude of the angle? How come you don't have any negative? So is it an absolute?
So yes. So I don't distinguish between this event and this event.
Okay.
So yeah.
How did you measure the anterior posterior axis? Was it sort of globally, or was it somehow a local line?
So
if you look at the tissue, it was sort of curved like that, right?
Right. So if you look at this this guy right here, I'm just approximating the AP axis by a line right here. And then when I do the histogram, I throw away this part.
Ah.
So, this line. I mean, of course, one could just draw a line right here and then do the same analysis, but I think it won't change the result.
But can you also see that there are waves of cell division? So, does it look like there is first division at the posterior and then with lower intensity travel? Is this like a position?
Okay, so maybe I shouldn't say wave. I'm saying that there's a burst of events that kind of travel towards the anterior end, and then there seems to be a second burst coming up, but then if it travels this way, then we can describe it as a wave.
So I'm like a growth zone where all the divisions are local and we just push the stuff out towards the anterior.
Yep.
There are divisions throughout. Right?
Yes, yeah. So it kind of reminds me.
This is very different to what happens, let's say, in vertebrate body axis elongation.
And in tripolium that you showed just
a few
minutes
ago. Yeah.
Yes. Why is it different to vertebrate?
Because to the extent that I understand, the divisions are only in one place.
Mm-hmm. Intercollatory. There's no proliferative zone in the posterior in the vertebrae.
I see.
Yeah,
the whole tripolium zone is a mess. Oh, does create confusion because there are some crustaceans in the group that Carvalho belongs to that have a clearly defined group of stem cells in a line at the very posterior.
Yes,
So there's the Malacostracans have a handful of those. Evidence has been claimed for a similar pattern.
This
in
is a different mode.
Annelid, I don't think it's very strong. And yet, we are always using this term growth zone for things that are adding tissue. And I think. I don't know of any evidence that really supports that except for this bizarre crustacean group. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So still a question related to the angles. So what is that? Is exactly the projection that we're looking at? So posterior, but where is dorsal ventral?
Okay, so the dorsal ventral, I mean, I think, so we are looking at from the dorsals. No, we are looking from the dorsal side. So, but you can, as you can see, there's some kind of twist in the embryo, so it's just not a very clear thing. And in principle, one could do it in 3D, but to save time.
But the way it's mounted, so is there some reason that it would be sticking on the dorsal or ventral side, or can it just be at any arbitrary angle?
It can be at any arbitrary angle.
and the line you chose for your reverend angle is just along the x-axis of this?
No, so I'm drawing one line across this way.
Right.
So this is my
the line it has some, you drew it by hand. Right.
Yes, I drew it by hand.
It doesn't have to be a line.
You're right, it could be
an. Okay, and just to kind of put every the spatial and temporal information together, we have the AP axis this way, and then time increasing in this direction, and each dot represents a cell division event. And what we can see is that there's kind of a it's suggested that there's a burst of events that kind of travel this way, where you can fit a line here, and then it kind of spreads out, or but I mean it's hard to tell by just looking at n equals to 1 data that what this means, but I think it's suggested that there's a burst that travels from posterior to anterior, and there's kind of a second burst coming from the posterior end. So just a short conclusion. German elongation appears to be mediated by different cellular behaviors. Of course, there's cellular rearrangement as well as cell proliferation, and what we see here is that cell division may be an important contributor to Grillo's elongation. Yes.
Could you indeed measure an effective elongation of the embryo, because you never showed this? You showed the cell division, you say maybe.
Yes, so did not do this quantitatively, but just by looking at this video, you don't really see a length change in the entire embryo. Right, so it's not clear, it's hard to quantify.
You see density?
You might see a buckle just here.
Yeah, there could be a buckling here. And
it could be the right case.
Yeah, this part is certainly going out away from the yeah.
We could do it in this plane, of course.
So how could you define the cell division? Was it automatic or was it tracking? why did you make that choice? There was not a software that allowed
Within the short period of time and the quality of data, it's hard to find one that gives you a clean data. And clicking this die took me 3 hours. I took the way that I think will work in the short period of time. Okay, so
just a very good thing. Sorry, Andy. Just a very good thing, because it was so, so this was with the broken light sheet up in the Y2 building. So we could basically just take a projection from one angle. But when we took this movie, one thing that really caught my eye was this population of cells. So this is referred to as the blastoderm. So it's supposed to be connected to tissue, but you basically see these cells, you know, catching up with this German condensation zone. And as they migrate or travel over there, the motion is really crazy. So again, I track this, and you will see this group of cells that goes in like these swirls, passes by each other. It's like, you know, catches up really quickly at some point. And so I just wanted to look at this early stage of this blastoderm in a little bit in more detail. And the one reagent we had available was just RNA for LifeAct in a complementary color to these histones. And so we could take some more one-angle swim data, where now also the actins is available. And so this here is basically this German condensation zone. The rest is basically adjacent blastoderm. And what you'll see in this movie is basically this tissue flow over here. And what I would like to draw attention to are these huge gaps between the cells. So I found this pretty amazing, actually. If you look at these cells, what they look like, you know, they look to me like these, you know, polarized fish keratocytes that are just crawling around, you know, on a glass slide. And eventually they basically pack, find each other, and kind of, so it's very difficult because it's a projection, there's yolk underneath. But they, you know, they are very crazy in this very crazy movement here. You know, and kind of like catch up to each other and make some sort of a continuous ethereal. And so I don't want to waste too much more time, but we had an even earlier movie where the nuclei are basically just arriving. And I think we were very fascinated just by this type of cell behavior, basically in, you know, what's called a uniform blastoderm structure.
This view is right at the cortex?
This is at the cortex, yeah. I mean, it's still a projection. It's just projected from the skull. It was very early. It captures one cell division. Cool. Okay. Of course, thanks to the to our amazing TAs. Thanks to the QBio program and the K2P Fox teams.
So we had lots of questions during the talk, so I'm going to ask you to hold any further questions until afterwards, over a coffee or something. Thanks very much. And we'll move on to the next group now, which is stem cells.
Elena and Granton and me. And you might remember us from the first week. We were those crazy people running around and really nearly crying about our dead stem cells. Because thanks to Oncolab, our cells died in the incubator a lot. But still we managed at some point. We got the incubator, we raised the CO2 level, and our cells in the end could survive, and we even got some really beautiful parents from them. So, okay, why are we interested in stem cell differentiation? Well, looking at this pattern, if we start with stem cells all looking the same, how do these patterns form? So that means how do mesodermic, ectodermic and endodermic cells come into appearance. And for this, there has already been a lot of research. So for example, on mice embryo, so this is a mouse embryo, and what is already known is that BMP comes from the top into the mouse embryo, and BMP makes the cells express nodal, and the level of nodal in each stem cell will then decide cell fate. So if there's a lot of nodal, cells differentiate into mesoderm. If there's a bit less, they differentiate into endoderm, and if there's nothing, then they differentiate into ectoderm. And so we know these two ligands turn the cell fate. We also know that BMP induces nodal expression and local level of nodal compensation. Okay, so, but we are more interested in human stem cells. However, it's not too easy to work with human embryos, of course. But what we can do is we can look at human embryonic stem cells in dishes. And there, we want to investigate the gene transcription network, which is already known. So what one knows is that there's this extracellular ligand BMP, and when it binds to a receptor, it actually phosphorylates SMAD1, and SMAD1 then can bind to SMAD4, and this heterodimer then can enter the nucleus. And the point is that the level of SMAD4 in the nucleus defines or makes the nucleus express more nodal, so there's a positive feedback. And yeah, as I said, the nodal level will determine cell fate, and nodal also has its own way to positively influence its own production via, it also binds to some other receptor, and SMAD4, a reporter, then phosphorylates and binds to SMAD4, and also this complex of SMAD2, SMAD4 can enter the nucleus. So there are two pathways to rise levels of SMAD4 and also nodal. Okay, this network, however, is not completely understood because data from the past suggests there's also negative feedback. And so we have the questions, how do BMP and nodal signaling really interact? Is there also an interaction between those out of the cell, or between SMAD1 and SMAD2, or whatever, anything could happen? Do they compete? And yeah, so we can address these questions experimentally because we got from KATP, we got some very nice inhibition factors.
Not from
KATP. Or maybe it's also the dissipated no problem. Okay, thank you anyway. Now we could treat our cells with the inhibition factor LDN, which actually blocks the BMP receptor, or with the inhibition, we could inhibit nodal here with SB. Okay, so now our experimental questions are, how do nuclei respond to the BMP treatment? So at first we have cells in a dish without BMP. How do they respond if we put BMP on there? Do they differentiate? Then, next question, how do they respond to BMP or nodal inhibition? How does the dose of BMP actually affect the signaling? So higher doses might have other effects. And also in the end, how long do we have to treat our cells so that they will differentiate and form several types of tissue? Okay, so this is more a general view, but you want to know probably how we did work on that in the lab. And for this, I will hand over to Dominic, who will give you a nice introduction to our lab work.
Thank you. So we basically worked with human embryo and stem cells. So these are our cells. And we basically put them in a dish together with Matrigel. So here we have our dish together with Matrigel. And Rafaela already introduced to you tools that we're using. So we are primarily using BMP. So we add BMP to our cells. And then after some time, we also play around with LDN, which is the inhibitor of the BMP signaling, and the SB, which is the inhibitor of the nodal signaling. And what we're doing is we're doing live imaging. So we have our inverted confocal microscopy here. And then over time, we acquired these images. So we had two reporters. We had a SMAD4 GFP, which is a reporter of a signaling pathway. And we had an H2B RFP, which is basically labeling the nucleus. So at the beginning of the stage, these cells will look like this. So we have our SMAD4 reporter in the cytoplasm, which is an indication that the signaling pathway is inactive. And then our nuclei are in red. And once we add BMP, then the SMAD4 reporter will travel to the nucleus, and this indicates the activation of the signaling pathway. And we use basically elastic and image processing to basically analyze these basically the ratio. So we want to see, we want basically quantify the ratio between the cytoplasm and the nucleus. And the way we did this is by first basically identifying the cells. So we use our H2B RFP to identify each nucleus of the image. And then we use the SMAD4 GFP to see, okay, where is our cytoplasm? And because these cells are so densely packed together, we can't really distinguish between individual cells. So what we did was we drew donuts around these cells. So we basically approximate the area of the cytoplasm of this cell. And then you quantify in the raw image what the intensity is. So you take these masks, and then you quantify, okay, what is the intensity of the raw image, and then you take the ratio of the nuclear intensity and the cytoplasm intensity, and you get the readout of the SMAD4 reporter. And in this example, the BMP was added, so the reporter goes up and then stays. So we used the system to analyze our data, so preliminary results suggested that LDN had quite an interesting effect. So when we added BMP to the cells, then you get an increase in SMAD4 reporter, and then basically stays at the same level. And then if you treat the cells after some time with LDN, you would just see BMP inhibitor, but then the signal gets down, but it doesn't decrease to zero, basically. So you basically, baseline. You still have some signaling left. So our question is basically, why do we still have signaling left? So the hypothesis might be that you still have signaling of nodal that increases the smartphone portal. And we bet. So it basically inhibits BMP signaling.
Still be visualizing the activity that was there before. Maybe you're inhibiting any more be visualizing after you add LDN.
So you're saying that the signaling is still there, but
potentially? I'm not sure what the readout is.
So the readout is SMAD4. So SMAD4 on the nucleus.
Nucleus SMAD4.
Yeah.
So if the receptor, if the LDN acts so upstream, it might not necessarily force nuclear exit of already nuclear localized SMAD4, perhaps.
But where do you get that sharp drop followed by a much like less pronounced?
Yeah, I mean, this one, you get the
average. You mean the intensity, right?
Yes.
So I think any new nuclear import could be shut down, so you see this sharp thing, but then the leftover is still whatever was there. And perdurance is what I would call it in engineering. Maybe. I couldn't report it works.
So I hand over to Elena.
So you're controlling BMP.
This would be the hypothesis that nodal is induced by the BMP signal. And then we use the SB inhibitor in the experiments that we were
doing. Nodal is a.
Yes, so BMP produces the nodal ligand.
There's also nodal in those media, but it's assumed that adding the nodal inhibitor doesn't reduce the baseline. So there doesn't seem to be a lot of nodal signaling right to start.
But you're not supplying the BMP of the time.
So we are adding it and then
6,000. So why isn't it it's different actually? What you have there is the effect of the drug and the concentration that you are having. It's not depleting to zero. And the other time scale, the other dynamics are the dynamics of actually destruction of the BMP that is left in the middle of the beginning.
No, that concept.
Because the drug will block BMP from, it'll bind to the receptors won't transduce.
I know.
They have some data that if you pre-treat the drug and then add BMP, it's not.
But how do you know that this goes down to zero? The receptor could also be that only partially is, at the single molecule level, zero. But at the concentration you're using and the conditions you're using, maybe you are not in that completely.
You're saying you just have partial inhibition.
Exactly, to the level of one, and the other dynamics are the dynamics of destruction, turnover of the BMP that you see there.
Turnover of the BMP or turnover of the SMAD?
The BMP. The BMP, the molecule that you're adding at the beginning.
You're saying you haven't completely inhibited the receptor, but then you're seeing the decay will be.
Exactly.
So, we know these doses are basically well above the ICP.
Exactly those questions or similar questions were ours, and that's why we did different experiments where we added different doses, actually only of PMP, but if we had more time, we could play with doses of all inhibitors as well. Maybe we could also add nodal at some point if we had it, and also with the time points one to add. Of course, Elena will talk about many of our results, which are not.
How long does it take for SMAD4 to actually get into the nucleus from the
BMP?
But the scale is very long.
I think we are imaging here at 10 minutes, I think.
Okay, so it's
about 10 minutes is enough.
So we have our questions, and we also have the methods that Dominic explained. So now we go to the lab, we kill some cells, and now we do some experiments at work. Okay, we take a made well dish, and in one of the wells we add BMP, only BMP, at 50 micromolar. We started with that, but anyway. So you activate this pathway here, and you see that SMAD4 increases in nanocells. What we plot there is the ratio of SMAD4 nuclei. With respect to the cytoplasm, so as soon as we put BMP, it increases very fast and then stays in a constant line. Okay, so then we want to repeat Ilse's experiment by adding BMP at the beginning, and then after 2 hours in one well and after 6 hours in another well, we add LDN inhibitor. So it's a BMP inhibitor, and we see what is the response of SMAD4 in the nuclei. And we see that after 2 hours and after 6 hours, we have a drop. But actually, there's no complete drop, or you see that it shuts down and then it feeds. So we want to see what is that because of nodal there? That there is a SMAD4 there because of nodal? So we add, I put a movie here. Do you want to see the response? Is it okay?
Yeah.
So you see the nuclei, then BMP makes it, you can't see the nuclei anymore because the SMAD4 response, and then you add LDN. And after a while, you can see the nuclei again because the SMAD4 decreases. So now we do another experiment and we add BMP. And after 2 and 6 hours, we add LDN and SP as well. Okay, so you would expect. Yeah,
SP is another inhibitor. Someone tell me, so I was supposed to see that after LDN treatment, the signal goes down, but not all the way to the baseline?
Yeah, we should see, but...
Yeah, we should see.
You see that one in the 6 hours, as opposed to the 2 hours.
Yeah.
Okay, so then my next question is, this is average? And so one way I can imagine then not being complete recovery is that some cells recover, go all the way to the baseline, and some don't get inhibited at all. So is there any heterogeneity in the final state?
We plotted, so for each well we took 4 positions in the same well, and we average over those positions.
But these positions still averaging over a lot of cells.
Yeah.
This would be a typical position here and there.
Yeah. This
is the average of 4 positions.
So, for example, you could imagine constructing a histogram of nuclear whatever intensity before, you know, whatever, times 0 and at 300.
But if you look at the picture, you already see that they all pretty much look the same.
We've already constructed the mental system.
And we did plot individual positions as well to make sure we didn't have like things going on and down and everything.
Okay, so what would you expect if you add SP to that? You would expect that it goes even lower, right? Because you're inhibiting more. But you actually don't get that.
So if you add LVN, which is not LVN, it's LVN plus SV, you get a higher baseline here. And actually, if you start with a PMP and add only SV, not LVN now, you get a higher response, which is blowing our minds, but yeah. So now we go back to the lab and see, let's check how BMP doses and SV interact with each other and see whether SV is actually, how this effect changes with BMP concentration. And we don't get good results. Again, with a very low BMP concentration, 1 nanogram, we see, so the dotted line is a well with only BMP, and the continuous line is a well with pre-treatment of SV and then treatment of BMP after 1 hour. So here you can see there is a difference, but actually if you put higher concentrations, you will see a difference.
What if you add SV without a BMP?
SV without BMP, so it still has one, and you can't see any difference.
And we also waited for half an hour beginning, so that it's
So then also this data is very noisy because we have problems with cleaning up the segmentation because there are cells with different data, so when you clean it you miss some cells, and if you clean up enough you're adding dead cells, and so it was a bit frustrating. But then we tried to model this, and that's what Simina is going to talk about.
Yeah, we started to think about what's going on with the So we're trying to figure out why we see these responses, and obviously if you ignore this added line there, which is the interaction between the SMAD1 and SMAD2, then it's a bit surprising that both BMP and nodal should be using higher levels of SMAD4 in the nucleus, but inhibiting the receptors doesn't give us what you would expect. So we started thinking that there might be some interactions between nodal and BMP within the cell. So the idea is that BMP will phosphorylate SMAD1, that then binds to SMAD4 to increase the activity of SMAD4 in the nucleus, and similarly with nodal and SMAD2. So we started thinking that maybe what's going on is that SMAD2 and SMAD1 either mutually inhibit each other within the cell, maybe by forming dimers that can no longer interact with SMAD4, which apparently is not a completely crazy idea, but maybe it's. Or perhaps compete with each other. So as far as I understand, we think that there's an adaptive response with nodal whereby SMAD4, phosphorylated SMAD4 can potentially sequester phosphorylated SMAD2 can sequester SMAD4 without successfully transferring into the nucleus. And if that's true, then deactivating SMAD2 through, for example, introducing SV could potentially make more SMAD4 available to SMAD1. And so explain why we see higher levels of SMAD4 when we introduce SV to them. So these are ideas that I think need to be thought of more quantitatively than we haven't done that.
All right, so then we wanted to determine the effects of BMP signaling for different times on differentiation in the tissue. So BMP treatment for how long is necessary to differentiate cells into the pre-germ layers as well as extra embryonic tissue.
So we took the cells that we were looking at in the microscope, and then we stained them after 42 hours to allow them to differentiate, to make sure we saw differentiation. And after staining for mesoderm, which is one of the germ layers, we do see